You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast after a long four-day hiatus. Hope you guys all had a good Thanksgiving. As always, my name is Adam Friedman. I'm a staff writer, IndyCornrows.com, and one of the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. And yes, because it's Monday, we're doing a weekly show, and that means the man who has four different NBA writing titles, Mr. Tony's on the other line to discuss what has been probably the second worst week of Pacers basketball we've covered since our 2 years of Locked On Pacers.
Wow. You think it was a bad week?
Well, I would say from
the news was worse than the results.
Like, well, I guess I'm anticipating another, let's say, bad Monday, Tuesday range. So
yes,
I guess
I understand that.
So if you take from last Wednesday to the following, you know, this Wednesday, let's say it's going to be probably the worst week besides that week that Vic was hurt last year.
Yes, I'm on board with that sentiment. Be like, so the Jazz game, I was psyched because that, like, winning by a ton without Vic against, I mean, the Jazz are clearly not as good as anyone thought that'd be this year, but like a team with two good, like two for sure good players.
I mean, that's you. We thought they were going to be great. Just so it's not everybody. It's Tony East.
A lot of ESPN dudes had him second in the West. All right.
But with a lot of Tony East blowing smoke up their butt. I know that. We had a conversation about this. Don't try to play this off. I'm sorry. You made a point.
Dude, look at ESPN's Western Conference preview.
You're making a point.
Anyway. Yeah. That was impressive. And then the Hornets was the opposite of impressive. And the Spurs, they were missing two of their four best players. So that is what it is. But it wasn't like so bad, but it kept going the wrong direction, which made it seem really bad.
Yeah. So I think we should start positive.
Yes.
Before we dive into semi-negative podcast. You know, we're both a little Debbie Downer sometimes. So it's not, this podcast is generally not super positive. It's a lot of I'm critiquing
we're
and complaining.
Adam, that's the word you're looking for.
Yeah, really. So the Jazz game, I actually thought was maybe the most impressive win of this like 2 year Victor Oladipo era. I thought, I mean, they just smoked the Jazz. And I know maybe I had this higher expectation for the Jazz because, you know, you would talk to me to them at least being a decent NBA team. But I mean, they were just super impressive in terms of they just blew the Jazz off the court. Like, it wasn't a competition. They didn't have their best player, and everything was going for them. Bogdanović hitting shots left and right. You had Holiday coming off the bench playing really well. You had Sabonis also off the bench. It was just a really good game of where everybody felt like they were contributing. And I feel like one of those games, you know, when they blow out bad teams and Vic has like 15 points and everybody kind of is all over the place and everybody's putting up stats. That's what it felt like. But because he didn't have Vic, it made it like that much more impressive.
Yeah, the Jazz starters had a combined 57 points, and 28 of them were Ricky Rubio. Yeah,
you take away Ricky Rubio, literally the Jazz score like 80 points maybe.
The Jazz starters minus Ricky Rubio had 29. Like the defense and the passing were so impressive by the Pacers in this game, which came out of nowhere without Vic playing. But yeah, like Sabonis said in the locker room after the game, he was pumped that they had 35 assists because their goal in the preseason was apparently to have 25 every game. But yeah, everybody was passing like a hot potato. Sabonis almost got a triple-double. He was eating alive Derek Favors and whoever the heck was the backup center, which I think is nobody for the Jazz. They just looked like an actual team. Like, they were running good sets, and you know, they were playing great D, which led to easy points on the other end. I think the Jazz had like an astronomical number of turnovers, something like 20 to 18. So yeah, everything culminated into like the perfect performance.
Yeah, I think there was a stat floating out there about the Jazz where their half course D is top 10 or top 12 range, but basically because they turn over the ball so much on offense and they just bleed out points. That's what kills this Jazz team this year has been their kind of fault is that because they need to kind of be set in a half court D with Gobert protecting the rim and having everybody kind of man up, their offense has been so awful that they can't seem to, it basically just wrecks their entire defense. And the Pacers took advantage of that completely, like you said, with the turnovers.
Right.
I think though we should talk about him this week, and that's Aaron Holiday.
Yes.
I mean, this was his most impressive game of his career so far. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Games, right? What's he at? Seven games, six games in minutes time? Seven, eight.
Yeah. This is the time when you laugh at me for being the most wrong ever. Like, this is the time to do it.
I mean, that was really impressive. And to do that.
So impressive.
Having basically played all of 30 minutes on the court in his first five games or whatever he was out there.
Meaningful
six games
minutes, it was zero.
Like, well, he played some meaningful minutes against the Hawks on Saturday.
Right before it. Yeah.
That was it. But he was just so impressive. And his 3-point shot is just, it looks really good. I know he struggled late in the week, and we can talk about how he kind of finished week 1 of 12, but it just looks like he just has like such a smooth release. and it just comes out of his hand clean. And he definitely is faster than he looks, and he just is making heads up plays too at times. Like, you watch him on the court, he's was constantly moving, and that's what you liked on offense, where like he wasn't ever stationary. He was trying to like constantly be running around, kind of get off a screen and stuff like that. He was just, he did everything you expect from a rookie, and that's a good sign, I guess.
He's really confident. Like, when you hear him talk after the game, he just seems like he like has been around for longer than 18 games the Pacers have played, 19. And he talked about like how he likes playing off of Corey Joseph, and like how he knows to move when Sabonis has the ball, and like all this stuff. They're like, wait, why are these your answers? Like, you're a rookie. You should be talking about like it being your first good game. So he just like clearly knows who he fits with and what to do. And certain guys have the ball, and you could tell, like you said, he's a good cutter, which was incredible to see. And I loved, he had 7 rebounds in that first game. Like, that is crazy
stuff. I think you underestimated his length. I think he has.
I really did.
He's short for sure, but when he was out there, he doesn't seem that small.
Someone sent me a screenshot of him like with his hand in Trae Young's face, and he's standing like 3 feet away from Trae Young. I was like, dang, he's really.
No, and I think you talk about his defense, that he's so small, it's going to kind of knock him. And, you know, out there, you don't notice.
At the rim, it does more than on the perimeter, though.
Yeah, but as a point guard, I mean, how many good many point guards are there? I mean, like, you know, like Rondo's a good example. Rondo's what, 6'1", 6'2", but he's got like a 6'9", 6'10" wingspan. And that made him such an effective defender back in the day, especially when he wasn't asked to do too much offensively, where Holiday can kind of have replicate some of that because he has like a 6'7" wingspan, I think.
Something like that. Yeah. 6'7" is what I heard too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we heard before after the draft. So I think you underestimated that. Obviously, he struggled towards the end of the week. He had 2 pretty bad games overall.
He's a rookie, though. It's like what you expect to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this week definitely proved. I mean, starting from Saturday, we talked about this in the last podcast, but he needs to be in the rotation. He does.
Yes, he does.
And I wonder if that should come at the detriment to another player that we kind of are down on this week, and that's Tyreke Evans.
Yeah, he played, you know, it's like this is weird to say, but this is like how I think more of him. He played well in that Jazz game. He had 5 assists, which is ironically his second highest of the season behind the season opener. Because when he's like more willing to distribute, I feel like he's better. Even when he shot 12 times, like he was willing to pass, and he wasn't as much of a ball stopper. And I think he's better in those games. He had 3 and then 5 again in the other 2 games, but he played less minutes. He just didn't seem like he was passing as much. And he was 1 of 12 against the Spurs. Like, it's just not, something's not working for him. And I can't figure out what it is beyond that. I think the ball stops at him too much. So it's concerning that he doesn't gel as much as everybody hoped as a secondary scorer and creator.
Yeah, I mean, so right before the 4-game stretch of Atlanta, Utah, Charlotte, San Antonio, where Vic basically didn't play those. I mean, he played the Atlanta game for like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
he had that big 23-point game against Miami that was really impressive, and kind of felt like, oh, that could be kind of a turning point.
Like, saved them in that game.
Oh yeah, he was awesome in the game, and then it just kind of flipped back. Like, he's so, in those 4 games, he's shot 27% from the field. He's 3 of 11 each game with like 8 points, and he's just like. Right. And I almost feel like he lives and dies by his pull-up threes somewhat. And yeah, even if he shoots 2 of 5, that's not good enough. Like, he has to shoot 4 or 5 to have a good game. Or, like, you know, a couple of games are when he shoots, like, 5 of 7, 3 of 6. Those kind of numbers are, like, where he's really impressive. But if he's – and he kind of lives off that. And I guess
– here you go. I got a fun one for you.
All right. What's
I did. I just caught this. I would say his 2 best games of the year were that Miami game and the Spurs game. And I think he won them the game in both of those games. And in both of those games, he was 5 for 7 from 3, which is easily his best 3-point shooting. And I 100% agree with you.
And his 3rd best game was Boston, where he shot 3 of 6.
Yeah, yeah. You're exact. I 100% agree with you. And he almost saved them against Boston, too. Yeah, you're 100%.
He was awesome against Boston, too. I mean, that's the thing. And I don't know if it's because he's still trying to figure out his role or not. And you can see he just doesn't know how he fits here, because it's a totally different role than he played last year. I mean, that's the first thing that you have to kind of look at. And it's the same thing with other players like McDermott kind of playing a different role than he played last year too. I mean, these are guys who both guys played on pretty bad teams, but were kind of the best guys on of the better players on those teams. So they got more touches, and they kind of, those teams weren't really caring about winning. So they were kind of just letting them do what they want and kind of control games. But now they have to play within a system, because this team actually like is interested in winning 50 games. And there's a system they want to run to kind of get guys minutes and rest and get guys touches, that it's a little bit harder for them to function.
Yeah, it's weird too, because like he's actively won them at least 2, probably 3 or 4 games.
Lance, so
it's
hard to think though last year, remember?
Yeah, but on the flip side, you have to say, like, how many has him being bad, like this Spurs game they just lost, like he actively hurt them? You know, like, how important is it to get him heavy minutes? How early is it too early in the season to sunk cost his contract? Like, yeah, probably, but you know, it's hard to balance that out this early in the year when we don't really know how he fits and stuff like that.
So that actually leads me to
kind of know,
but I got like 2 questions for you, 2 points. So the first one is, So we talk about how he sunk them games and won them games. It's kind of similar to Lance last year, where Lance did that too, right? He won them. And I guess at the $14 million value, maybe that's the nature of the role he's playing with his team, that player who's in that spot is just that's kind of the way it ends up. Is Lance then the better value at $4 million ultimately? I mean, that's kind of, you know what I mean? Or is Tyreek better on other ways that he helps him not lose as many games? I mean, that's the kind of thought. And then in that terms, like you said, sunk, or is he worth getting off of now? I think he's kind of the centerpiece of a trade if they ever make a move at the deadline.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, that would look bad on the Pacers to like buy all in on this dude and then trade him.
Well, it would be a move to get a better play. Like, they couldn't just dump him. Let's put it that way.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. It'd be a move to get someone better. But yeah, it's hard to say. Like, there are games where he looks really helpful, but overall, he has been incredibly underwhelming. And of course, like every Pacers player, we all set our expectations like miles too high for him. But he's been actively bad in some games, so it's worth talking about. He needs to be better.
Yeah, he does. I agree with you.
And finishing at the rim has been my biggest concern for me. He's always been like this whole career, but like, it really matters when, besides a pull-up three, like, he literally cannot score well from many other places.
Yeah, I mean, it's telling that his shooting percentage matches his three-point percentage, which has been pretty good. 37.1% when his shooting percentage is 37.4. Like, that's just not good. It means you're basically only making a three-point shot sometimes, or at least you're only getting those kind of like long jumpers.
I agree. You are correct.
I guess the last kind of thing we probably should hit before we hit our first break is just talking Vic, you know? He's questionable for Monday's game. We're recording this podcast at Sunday night at 11 p.m. Eastern time.
Doubt that gets updated by the time this comes out.
Yeah, I doubt it does too. It's coming out in 5 hours. So if I had to guess, he's not going to play. He is questionable. Didn't practice Saturday. Turner did practice Saturday, so I think he's probably going to play. I have had a guess. They beat the Jazz last week. It didn't seem to matter. They play the Suns, who also are a pretty bad team. They should be able to beat without their star. But I wonder if Vic's absence is exposing other flaws in this team that we've kind of been hitting on for a few weeks now, because we reached kind of the point where we can start looking at stats and evaluating things, where they have this like flaw where we, in our mailbag, for example, we got a ton of questions about, is McMillan a good coach or a bad coach? And we weren't really sure. And I think the true telling of a good coach is when they're able to get the most out of bad players, right? Like, Brad Stevens was like the king of that. I mean, now he's struggling, so it's, who knows, but like, it was taking guys who were so below average or average and stretching them to their max and winning 50 games or whatever it was, getting the playoffs. Well, McMillan, now without Vic, hasn't been able to do that. Now, he was able to do it Monday, so maybe it's just small sample size or not, but it seems like, you know, they had a shot to either beat the Hornets or Spurs, and he just wasn't able to get enough out of them. And I don't know whether it's rotations or if it's just lack of whatever it is. I mean, it may not be his fault, but I think exposing some of that right now.
I will push back on the Spurs game a little. I agree with the Spurs, or I'm sorry, I'll push back on the Hornets game a little. I agree on the Spurs. I think the rotation was kind of awkward, and, you know, no Turner made it hard, obviously, to mix and match, but like, O'Quinn and Leaf together was not great and stuff like that. You know, you never expect, like, why, you can't think that duo would work. Like, why would you try that? But the Hornets game was their fourth game in six nights on the road right before Thanksgiving. And they just looked like they had tired legs to me the whole game. Like, they gave up a bajillion open threes because their defensive rotations were so slow. And the Hornets hit a ridiculous number of threes. I think they hit like 62% of their 30 attempts. And it's not just like they had a ridiculously hot game. Like, they were really open on a lot of those shots. So I think they were just exhausted for that game after going back to back and then immediately playing two nights later and then traveling and then playing again. Like, that's hard. But the Spurs game, yeah, no excuse there. I think McMillan did not have a great rotation ready for that one.
Yeah, I think against the Hornets too, Sabonis got in foul trouble. And I think when, especially with Noah Vick, Sabonis like kind of becomes their offensive center point a lot of times. And it's him and Bojan on the center points then. And the fact that he only played 19 minutes that game is really, I mean, that had to kill them. Yeah, I mean, if it had to kill them, they only played 19 minutes. I mean, right. Forcing to play O'Quinn, basically. Turner just isn't ready to take over offensively, so it had to kill the team, and that's not coaching. That's kind of wants a bonus a little bit.
When he plays with Turner, it's so tough for him, like on the perimeter, to not get beat and have to foul. You know, like, that's a tough position for
him. Is that where he's drawn a lot of his fouls, though? I guess
not a lot. People pushed back when I wrote about this too. I think I phrased this poorly. Like, it's not on the perimeter he's fouling; it's still around the basket, but it's because he started on the perimeter.
He got beat. He's trying to recover. Slams through the wrist. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I haven't looked at it. I mean, you did an article on it, so you may have looked
into it. I just said it the same way I wrote it, and you still like. said something different, which is my fault.
No, I just asked more of a deeper question of, is that where it's about to coming? And
you all right. I see what you're saying.
I mean, but I mean, that's a problem. I guess they have
to. They need him to play. Yeah, they need him to play. He's amazing.
He's their third or fourth best player. I mean, maybe second some nights.
Maybe, yeah, maybe second this year.
I mean, he's been awesome. So he needs to play. I mean, if he could play 30 minutes a game, he would have put up 30, almost 20.
Well, then he did play 30 minutes, but it's hard for him to have his effect on offense and still play effective defense when he does play that much. And we saw that, you know, Aldridge went off. The Spurs got to the rim a bunch. And Sabonis had a great offensive game, but his defensive game was not as good.
Yeah, that's true. He did play 34. I mean,
there's a healthy balance for him, and it's above 18 and below 34.
I guess the whole point of this whole discussion is, if Vic misses two more games, because I think we both think the target is the Lakers game, right?
I agree. Yep.
If he misses the next two games, do they win both, split, go 0-2, and they end up like, it's just, are they going to end up 11-10 before they end going to LA?
We're
going to
preview games, but I think they can beat the Suns without him.
Okay. I mean, I just, you know, the Vic injury, this idea of Vic getting injured has always worried me, because last year he got hurt and they went 0-6 or 0-4 or 0-5 that stretch with him. And so that worried me. And we thought, you know, they get Terry, they could survive a game or two. And they actually survived one. So, I mean, give them credit for that. They went 1-2 a week without their best player. Like, that's pretty good. I mean, any team would take that, especially against three teams who aren't bad. I mean, it's three 500 teams they played. So it's not like they're playing the Suns or the Magic every night. But the question, I guess, is is there a chance they need to go get that number two guy sooner if Vic keeps having these 4 or 5 misses where they keep losing.
I don't think so. I don't think this encouraged me that they need to trade at all.
Well, it encouraged me because Vic injuries seemed like something he could re-aggravate a couple times. And if he misses 15 games this year, they might not make the playoffs. Like, that's how bad they are without him, right?
I don't think that's the case. I don't think they'll make the playoffs.
You think even if he misses 15 games, they make the playoffs? Like, I think they go 1-14 or maybe.
Yeah, they go 4-11 and then they win. They go 500 the rest of the or over a little over 500 the rest of the way. Yeah, they'd be fine.
That's so they would need to make up 7 games into 500. I mean, that's hard.
Yeah, I think they could do
they're
it.
They're not. I mean, they're with
they were him, 10-6 before he got hurt.
Yeah, but you extrapolate that out over.
They had a hard schedule and they were 10-6 before he got
70
hurt.
70 games, right? So you multiply each of that by like 5 or 4 before we get to there. I mean,
that's 50-30.
Okay. No, but then you lose 7 games. So then you end up 43 and
I don't like the playoffs.
Which is borderline playoffs. 43 wins is going to be borderline playoffs last year.
I'm confident in my answer.
Okay. I'm just saying like that is a concern. You know, Vic playing 75 games might be out of the question with the way he keeps.
Can I simplify the Spurs game before I move on?
Yeah, that's fine.
Even if he had the perfect rotation, if you're forced to play TJ Leaf over 15 minutes, you're just not going to win.
Yeah, no, that's true. it's true. And
he's not good enough. He's just not good enough.
Well, if they had maybe a really good number two guy, he could carry them, is all I'm saying. Yes.
And I'm going to get someone who tweets at me and says, oh, TJ Leaf was plus 10. Yeah. Imagine if someone better than Leaf was there, that lineup's now like a plus 20 or something instead. So
yeah, I mean, like we both agree they can survive a Miles Turner injury, but they can't survive a Vic injury, right? Like, and then both being it hurts them, but like that's kind of
yeah. When it's both, you have to have a guy like Leaf.
I mean,
you can have just Kylo Quinn.
I think we can agree they can survive an injury to almost to every like if any other player on this roster got hurt for a 3-game stretch, they would probably still go 2-1 and 3-0 if they had Vic, which is a concern. It shows there's not a ton of other value.
Also, everybody I think else. It could have gone 2-1 if it was just one guy injured, but it was two. So you have to dig even deeper into the backups. And like now you have two guys who never play together playing big minutes together. Like that matters so much.
It does. No, it does. And frankly, winning as a Jazz was a huge plus, probably a huge moral boost for the team. So, I mean, we shouldn't.
You said they'd go 0-3 if you didn't play, didn't we, last week?
We did. So that Jazz, I mean, you also overestimated the Jazz, but that's
besides the question. I did. I totally.
Well, speaking of the Jazz, we are going to preview the game and Pacers play a game in Utah this time after a quick break. Welcome back into the Locked On Pacers podcast. So the Pacers play the Jazz the second time in 1 week, similar to the way they played the Rockets twice in 1 week last 2 weeks ago now, right? Going on 2 weeks ago. The Pacers blew out the Jazz last time. Let me pull the box score again. I had it up for a little while.
So,
The numbers, though? They beat the Jazz 121-94, by the way.
They smoked them. The Jazz are 26th in offense and 14th in defense, 22nd in pace. I think I want to go retroactively back to our last week's show about the Jazz.
Yeah.
Obviously, we talk about the Jazz and like we have a blend of what they've done this year and last year in our mind. I think having a Jazz guy on would have been huge because it changes your perspective of the Jazz a lot when you realize that Donovan Mitchell has like not been very good this year.
Oh, he's been bad, right? I mean, his shooting percentage-wise, he put up 20 points, but shooting percentage-wise, he's bad.
He's not been good shooting the ball this year. His defense has been a little worse as he carries more of an offensive burden. So it's been rough going for him. He's shooting 41.8% right now, 29% from three. So he's scoring a lot, but he's scoring 20.6, but he's taking 18 shots a game. When you're the only creator on your offense, it's really hard to keep a high load going. So I understand why he's struggling, but it has not looked pretty for the Jazz.
No, it has not. And frankly,
and he's hurt. I didn't even know that.
Their offense is just really bad, frankly.
It has been very bad. There's a reason the 26th, I don't think, did it justice. They look putrid against the Pacers.
Well, they just don't have anybody outside of Mitchell who can like kind of create his own play. I mean, I guess Rubio did it that night, but like most of the time
that's not going to happen.
Most of the time you could just kind of cover Ingles and cover Crowder, you end up with this kind of stale offense of like Mitchell just trying to create a shot.
Yeah, it was very strange. And Mitchell was only 3 of 8. If Ricky Rubio doesn't hit 5 of his 6 threes, like who knows? Like that might have been like a season changing game for them. They were that bad.
Yeah, and they were awful. And I think the turnover thing too is it seems like they're a very sloppy team right now.
So, and their roster construction, normally if they had just split up the Gobert and Favors minutes, it wouldn't be a big deal, but they start them together. So there's brief stretches where this guy, Royce O'Neal, who's an okay wing defender, but he's playing center, and then Sabonis is on him, and it's like this 6'8 wing who has no post-defensive skill guarding Sabonis. Sabonis is going to eat that dude alive, and he did. Like, that's just a great matchup for the Pacers.
Yeah, and I think – offensively too, it was a great matchup for Bojan, which we didn't.
Yeah, he didn't have a great game.
Didn't quite figure. He had Ingles on him most of the game, right? And he just
And Ingles looked terrible. He at one point Ingles airballed a three and then immediately took himself out of the game because he was like tired or something.
Right? Were they playing a back to back at this point? I'm trying to remember.
No, they're playing a back to back on this one.
Right. That also is kind of a huge plus for the Pacers. I mean, Pacers have a back to back, but to draw a team on a back to back in the first night of a back to back, it's a lot of back to backs.
Mitchell might not even play.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of back to backs. When you're out your best player, you're looking for as many advantages as possible you can get, and that's a huge.
They're playing right now. I think they're literally playing right now.
They don't play till right. Are they playing right now? So where are they now?
They won today. They won in Sacramento today without Mitchell.
So they were in Sacramento. They're coming back home. They have to travel. Yep. But yep. They're both on West Coast time, so sometimes.
Yeah. No. Utah's in Mountain Time.
Mountain. Okay, so that's a time zone change, which isn't that big of a deal. But I don't know.
Started Jay Crowder in Mitchell's spot. He had 14 in 26 minutes. Rubio had 27 again. Apparently, he's a very good player this year.
Well, if Mitchell doesn't.
Oh wait, they changed it up completely. Favors didn't start either. Royce O'Neal started. Interesting.
Well, if Mitchell doesn't play, then it's pretty much even in terms of missing players.
Yeah, that's fair.
Although, so you look at the Pacers of last week, there's a reason they give up the second most points they give up to a team all season without Vic, right? So the most points they give up this season is 127 or 120, right? 127 to the Charlotte Hornets, and then 111 is like the second or third most they've given up, and they give up 115 to the Rockets. So like, there's a reason that happened basically without Vic. So I don't know if, you know, Mitchell's really impactful on one end of the floor, but Vic's on both ends.
Yes, that's a big deal. Yeah, and that's like the drop from Vic to Tyreek is obviously sizable, but then like the drop from Tyreek's D to, you know, now Kojo playing the 2-on-0, like that drop's pretty big. Or like Holiday, you know, like as a rookie, like that drop is big. It's not necessarily always the drop from Vic to guy number two. It's the drop from guy number two to guy number three.
Yeah, well, I guess the drop from Mitchell to Rubio is supposed to be really big.
Yeah. Well, in this game against the Kings, it was from Mitchell to Royce O'Neal, who definitely cannot create anything.
But they did score 133 points. Holy crap. They did.
Oh, the Kings defense. Yes, of course.
Well, the Kings defense. Okay, so I guess we'll.
Mighty Sacramento Kings defense.
Although Gobert played 29. Rubio, they didn't play a ton of minutes, but they did play, you know, upper 20s, which is not, you know, if they're playing 21, that would make it easier back-to-back, I guess.
We'll talk about the Kings later in the week, but their 110.6 defensive rating probably has a lot to do with that being
also underrated part of the Jazz is Salt Lake City is a little bit elevated too.
Yes, that's true. It is harder.
I mean, that's why it's hard to win in Denver and hard to win in Utah. I don't know if they won in Utah, but it's been a while.
If they play a similar game to Monday with the ball movement and Mitchell doesn't play, I think the Pacers win again. I really do.
Yeah, but the Pacers, I don't think the Pacers have won in Utah in who knows how many years. I want to look that up.
They won last year in Utah.
Oh, right. They did before they had one. That's right. They lost at home last year.
Yes. Yeah.
But I mean, that's an underrated part too, but they have to play in elevation. And that's something.
I feel like they lose in Denver a lot personally. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
Oh, they lose in Denver every year. They've won Denver. Well, one year they played Denver on their Denver home game, like the Denver road game in England, and lost that one by like four.
Yeah.
But,
I skipped Butchers and stuff.
You want to do that real quick?
So they just played. So it just seems like we can just get to the fun part. But Yeah, I always will pick.
What's the fun part?
The fun part is predicting who's going to win the game.
Oh, well, we want to do that because we picked the same guys last time.
I'm going to pick Gobert.
I'm going to pick Rubio.
Hey, okay, that's a good pick. He's a
Rubio butchered up the Pacers last time. He was just a
incredible. They kind of let him shoot, so like that's a fair pick.
Yeah, I mean, I would let Rubio shoot. He's shooting like 27% coming in, or now he's shooting up to, well, 36% now, but I'm pretty sure he was not at that percentage a week ago.
And same X factor, Sabonis against whoever the heck they use at backup center.
Yeah, Sabonis was awesome in that game.
Yeah,
Bojan was too.
No Mitchell, I think the Pacers win for sure. With Mitchell, I know he's been bad, but like he can still score. Then I think they have a chance to win, and I will still predict them to win, but not as easily.
So before Rubio played the Pacers, he was shooting 27% from three.
Holy moly.
And now he's shooting 36. So that's how much he, I mean, I would Pacers, Scott Porter says, leave Rubio open, let him take every shot. He'll make one.
Yeah.
And said, how many threes he make? He was like
5 of 6.
5 of 6. Yeah. So you would expect like two of those to go in. You got three, you got nine extra points.
Yeah. It's crazy.
But it wasn't enough. I think if Mitchell doesn't play, it's for sure a win. If Mitchell does play, I'm 50-50 on it.
Yeah, that's fair. I will lean with that way as well.
All right, that's fair. I think Turner plays. I think Vic doesn't, but I guess we'll see.
We will see. Should we take another break and then talk some Suns?
Yeah, let's do that. All right, Tony. The Phoenix Suns are the worst team in the NBA this year?
The Phoenix Suns are coming off a win over the Bucks, Adam. What the heck?
Wow. That's good. That's good for the Pacers playoffs.
So I have a weird theory that applies to this game.
All right.
I think the first home game back after a road game, after a road trip, is still kind of a road game because you have to travel back home. And the Suns are coming back from an East Coast trip.
Yeah, but they're not playing on a back-to-back like the Pacers.
No, that does help them. But they're also a bad basketball team.
Yes, they're a very bad basketball team. They are. So let's just say they're 28th in both offensive defensive rating. They're 4-14. They're 18th in pace, which is odd. Usually for a bad team, usually top five in pace most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. The Kings are top five in pace. We'll talk about them not today. Anyway.
Yeah,
we'll tell them later. We'll tell them later.
Yeah, we'll do it later. But yeah, they are they're just not a great NBA team this year. They need something else. They need a point guard. They need another guy.
That's good. That's what I was going to talk about.
You know, Aiden's put up stats. I don't know if he's been
horrible on defense. Like,
yeah, he's been not. So but he's a rookie, and I don't. Yep. No rookie's good at defense. Booker has been actually, I think, pretty good this year.
So what I have seen about the Suns a lot is like their net rating with either of a Kobo or who's their other point guard that they play a lot of. I cannot remember his name. This is not going well for me. Isaiah Kanan. There it is. Isaiah Kanan. With Okobo or Kanan and Booker on the floor, they have a very negative net rating. But when they have no point guard and Booker's the point guard, they actually have a positive net rating. So they really, really, really need a point guard.
Yeah, they really do. And I actually think we talked about last, but I think Trevor Reese is there to take.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He'll get bought out.
Here's the thing. Here's a fun thing too. Like if you're a Pacers fan who wants him, and I've seen a lot of people who do, it's like a risk, right? Because like I feel like you have to try to trade for him because they're gonna obviously buy him out, and then he will sign to wherever he wants.
So Houston.
Yeah, which I think is gonna be Houston too. So you have to jump on that train of trading for him before he gets bought out.
If you're gonna get rid of Collison this is where this is going. So if you're gonna get rid of Darren Collison in the offseason, is it really a risk to get rid of him 4 months earlier?
Yeah, it's tough to say.
So maybe, I mean, right, that's the move. That's a move that's just sitting there to take. It's Trevor.
Way later in the year. Much later in the year.
No, yeah, but that's the move that's sitting there and
around Christmas time. The second you get a sniff that the Suns are finally gonna make the buyout, you pounce on it.
Especially if Holiday is gonna get minutes, this is like, that's like makes no brainer sense.
Yeah. So for this particular game, Ariza is going to play for the Suns, and he's going to play good D and not make a lot of shots because the Suns have absolutely no shot creation at all outside of Devin Booker.
Yes.
Like the Jazz, except a lot younger and worse on D.
Yeah, and Booker's stats are more a product of his shots per game than anything else. I mean, he's not shooting terrible. He's shooting 44 and 32, which isn't great, but it's not terrible. But a lot of it could take that shots.
Yeah.
Is he hurt right now, too?
Wasn't he hurt like right until the year started? Remember that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He had surgery, right?
After
he signed his big contract.
But here's what I think is impressive about Booker. He has 7.3 assists per game. Like, he is good as a lead ball handler.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a good NBA player if you put some of the right guys around him. Like, I would not want them to make the John Wall trade.
You know who I don't think is the right guy for Booker in the future? DeAndre. Who?
Really? I think, I don't know. I
think Mikal Bridges is, though.
Okay. I just think you have to wait. I don't know. I'm not, it's been 18 games on Ayton. I don't want to say
I like Ayton. I think he's good, but Booker needs like a defensive center, and Ayton is not a defensive center.
Yeah, but like, what if, I mean, Ayton is such a freak of nature in terms of size. He could just develop into something that's completely just awesome and it won't matter. You know what I mean?
Well, am I crazy? Or do you feel like people were talking about Ayton as like a shooter in the pre-draft stuff?
There was some discussion
because
he took some threes in college. I remember them taking like
two threes this year.
Or at the time in college, he'd pump the three and drive to the rim. Like he had some ability to put the ball on the floor. No, but I always thought Aiden's big thing was he's just like
he can jump out of the gym. Yeah,
he's an athletic marvel. I mean, you watch him in college and you're like, this guy just belongs in the NBA like right now. What's he doing? He's like a grown man playing against college. You think he'd be like 30 years old the size he is? I mean, that's and he probably has room to get bigger too, which is incredible. I mean.
Here's the thing with Ayton, though, that matters the most for this game. I don't care who the heck is handling the ball. Literally anyone can score on him going at him in the pick and roll. Like,
yeah.
Thad Young as the ball handler can score.
I mean, I think Aiden's best example, best, like, I guess, our future is to become like DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah. Maybe like a better shooting DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, but like in terms of just the guy that can shoot like 70% from the field is just kind of just crushing guys, and a guy who can be not a extreme liability on defense, but isn't quite good enough in a constantly switching
he was
NBA.
Good for a little bit there, like right now, DeAndre Jordan, you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm thinking
at his peak, he was a great defender.
Yeah, I guess, but he always got screwed in the switches. Like it didn't matter once the Warriors came along, he was toast. And I guess the thing we think about too with Ayton. Is in 5 years, will the NBA be the same as today? Will it be those two revolutionary guards in like a Curry and a Klay Thompson? Because if those guys aren't there, does the NBA kind of make us revert back to the center's time where finding a center is super valuable?
I'm not sure about that. That'll be tough to see.
Right? Because like if you don't have – I mean like the reason everybody went to the fast-paced stuff is because Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. But those are two of the – like greatest 3-point shooters.
But it's not like the Morey ball stats and stuff is gonna not be effective anymore just because they're out of the league.
No, but if Aiden's able to shoot 70%, it makes that actually more effective than the more like then you're kind of the difference when you're battling numbers versus you're battling like legendary players. You know, it's easier to say, okay, we're gonna pound with Aiden, we're gonna shoot 70%. You can take every three and we'll see who wins that battle. Versus like we're gonna have Aiden, we're gonna have like DeAndre Jordan when you're gonna have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
Has anyone ever shot 70% like ever?
I thought DeAndre Jordan came close a couple years. Now he didn't take a ton of shots, so that's also part of it.
You might be right about that.
He led the NBA in field goal percentage
I'm going to start all players all time who have played 5.
Yeah, he shot 71% in 2014-15. Wow. He shot 70 in 2015-16, 71 in 2016-17.
That is impressive.
But he's only taking 7 shots a game, so let's how much is Ayton at right now? I was looking at his stats a minute
ago. More than that, I think.
We're at 61% in 12 games. That's pretty effective, you know. Yeah. Right? I mean, right? Doesn't if you?
So there have been 6 seasons over 70% shooting ever.
Really? So Ayton. So Jordan has three.
Jordan has three of them. Yeah.
Well, we put Chris Paul. That helped.
Wilt Chamberlain, Chris Wilcox, DJ, and that's actually it. I was wrong. It's really fine.
Really, that's interesting. I would say, with Morey ball, right? It's if you shoot 33%, it's equivalent to 50% from the field. So there's like as you go up, it increases, right? So if Aiden's able to shoot 60, let's say you get to 65% on 15 shots, that might
be over 40% 3-point shooter. Yeah, it's real good.
Yeah, I mean that's where you have to value that with Ayton. Where like he can't play D, but maybe he'll figure it out somewhat to be not a liability.
He can create his own shot. Like that's the difference between him and Capella. Like Capella is so reliant on the guards.
Kind of Gobert too a little bit.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Whereas. And so was DeAndre even, but as a guy like Ayton can score on his own.
And I wonder if you can coach defense into him too.
You gotta hope you can.
I mean, right? That's the one skill you can kind of teach, especially because he's just an athletic freak. Like he's got to have something that you can, you know, say this is going to be your defensive kind of, identity basically.
Yes. So another thing for the Suns, because we've been talking about Ayton for too long.
Well, I think I don't know. I like talking about the number one pick. We haven't talked about him in years. So
I know.
I've had a lot of Ayton stuff held up because I haven't talked about him.
All right. I'll push back with this. Doncic, his coach is that Igor guy for his national team. Does Ayton go number one if he goes to non-Arizona school?
No, he probably goes.
I think he does not go number one either.
He goes Sacramento, though. They take him in a minute.
I agree. But that doesn't matter for this game. TJ Warren, who I said, no, I don't want them to trade for him because I don't think he'd be effective because he can't shoot for the Pacers. He is shooting 47% on 4 threes a game this year. So apparently I'm an idiot.
TJ Warren is one of my favorite players only because he's like the stealthiest fantasy pickup you can find.
You talk like, about this every time we talk about him.
Well, I don't have him this year, but last year, man, he was like, nobody thought about it. Like, he's just like, I mean, he's a bad team, good stats guy, probably. I mean,
yes, he is.
Probably.
And but making threes is like a giant revelation for him.
Yeah, I would wait more than 17 games. But,
hey, but if he shoots the games like a lot, though.
What's his contract? Because, I mean, if he's shooting this well in 40 games,
he's like 4 for 48 or something.
That'd be somebody you can steal. I mean, that's the thing you got to look at.
He seems like a trade candidate, too.
Oh, he might still be the last year of his rookie deal.
No, he's making 4 for 50 right now.
So he might be a guy you could steal, too, which actually, he's a 50% three or 40-something percent three-point shooter, he's worth having for 4 years at a pretty decent salary. Yeah. I mean, with the Suns, though, you're looking at picking guys for kind of low value, right? You're like flipping a Darren Collison or a Bojan kind of, I don't know, Bojan might be too much, but flipping kind of bottom guys you might get rid of anyways and maybe a second round pick to get them instead of, you know, making a big splash and just kind of adding to your team with young guys, building that core back up.
The other focus on Warren, though, I had the three-point shooting just to make myself be dumb, is that he's not a good defensive player. And if you've caught the theme yet, Devin Booker plays a lot. He's a terrible defender. Ayton plays a lot. He's a terrible defender. TJ Warren plays a lot. And guess what? He's a terrible defender. Ryan Anderson plays 20 minutes. Guess what? He is a terrible defender. And Jamal Crawford will play 13 minutes. Guess what?
He's a terrible defender. That's why they have the 28th ranked defensive ranking in the NBA.
My theme of this is the Pacers will have many, many, many opportunities to score many points.
Now the question is, will they actually
– Will they actually do shots? On a back-to-back, on the road, if they're going to have a good offensive performance given the tough circumstances the Suns are the team to do it against, but a lot of stuff's going against them.
Yeah, I think it might be closer than we expect, but I think because you can get a lot of points in the paint off them, that they will have a better shot because they'll go in. I mean, the Pacers will try to go in and make paint shots all the time. I mean, you know, I mean, they're the team that just wants to make every 2-point shot.
I'm literally only afraid of Booker being a guy who can actually swing the game for the Suns. So,
yeah, I'm just worried that on a back-to-back there isn't enough of an energy from somebody offensively to kind of carry them. Like there isn't that, like, you know, on back to back, Vic would still bring it. And he, you know, and maybe he'll play. I mean, this could be the game he plays. Maybe he'll put up 35 because the rest will be tired. But you need that guy that kind of on a back page says, I'm going to be the guy tonight. And maybe Sabonis can do that. I mean, I think Sabonis has that in him.
Sabonis has a great shot.
I mean, it's a great shot.
Backup center for the Suns is now Rishon Holmes.
Well, especially if we're being honest, he'll probably end up with 5 fouls and play 21 minutes against the Jazz. So
that needs to be way more focused on.
Oh, his foul trouble needs to be because he is in the midst of, like, could he become, like, one of the kind of best young centers in the league? And
limit right now.
He's being just held down because he can't stay on the court, which is ridiculous because he is such a good offensive player. I mean, at some point, somebody's going to say, wow, Sabonis is shooting, what's he shooting, 60-something percent? And he's making 15 points a game. Sorry, he's at, 69% on 14.4. Like, that's incredible. That's he probably leads the league in shooting percentage right now, I would guess, right? Or close to it.
It's up there.
So and he's making his threes. He's starting to make some threes. He's starting to, you know, put that in his game. I'm big on Sabonis. You can't tell over the past, you know, three podcasts we've done. I guess other butcher wise, you took
I don't Booker, have right? anyone.
Well, you took Booker. I guess I would lean towards TJ Warren having a good game. I guess he's good offensively.
Yeah, but he is.
Maybe Ariza because you put Bowen on Ariza and they get a bunch of shots, I guess.
Yeah. There's a lot of maybes, but I'm never going to be like, yeah, that guy could totally.
I think this game is just like a high paced, which could be bad for the Pacers in terms of because it's back to back and just a lot of shots. And it's just comes down to like, is Booker going to be able to shoot more than 30% from three?
Exactly. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think this could be a great game for literally anyone. I picked Sabonis against the Jazz. I want to pick Bojan, but Ariza is actually a good defender.
So. Yeah, same. I think this could be an Aaron Holiday game.
It could be an Aaron. Ooh, now we can start picking him. I'm going to pick a point. Darren Collison gets back on track in this game.
Okay. Ew, he plays so well. He boosts his trade value because the owner Sarver
sees it.
Oh, I want that guy. Let's just trade. Because that's how Sarver. Remember, that's your point about him taking DeAndre Jordan. Like Sarver,
extra layers, baby.
Well, Sarver is like one of the biggest donors to Arizona. And that's why they picked. Yeah. I'm almost certain. I'm not almost certain. That's the right, but I'm speculating a ton. You know how Aiden got $100,000 probably before the draft. You don't think Sarver had some play in that because he's the largest donor to the men's basketball program at the University of Arizona, if I had to guess. Yep. Mormon. So just throwing that out there.
I think they have a good chance of winning again.
So do I. I think this worst case, they go 1-1 on this back-to-back. But now if they won both games, that would be – now they've won three. They swept their first two back-to-backs, right?
Yep.
So that would be pretty good. It's giving a big middle finger to the scheduling gods.
Yes, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. I agree. All right. You got anything else for today's podcast? You want to tease some of the stuff you're writing, since I know you're like me and didn't write for like the last 5-6 days.
Tomorrow I have some on the free throw shooting coming out. And not just makes and misses. It's more than that, which is cool.
All right. That should be interesting.
And I have a good free throw. I finally have my Aaron Holiday thing coming out too. So.
All right. We always love a good free throw conversation.
Yes.
All right. We teased this before, but we're going to do the Kings game and what's the fifth game of the Lakers game.
Yeah.
On Thursday's podcast, so we know another weekly show.
Two weekly shows, yeah.
Yeah, we took last week off a couple of days, so we thought we'd give it to you this week. As always, we'll be there after each game. We had a great last month. I guess the month's over. We've had a great kind of really beginning of season run now, so we appreciate all you guys listening. I guess we're about a month into the season, so a great kind of first month to the season. As always, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can tweet at us at all times. We'll probably respond, whether sarcastically, whether mean, or just happy to kind of answer your questions. Especially this, you know, when you do it during the week, Tony and I will see the question answered on a podcast because it's kind of like gives us an idea for topic. It's easy to do. So send out a question. Maybe we'll respond to it on a podcast. You can follow Tony at Teased NBA and me at FreedomAdam5. As always, leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, wherever you get this podcast. That's all for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest.